Great to be with you on this Friday, the 23rd of November. This is Let's Talk, coming to you on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service, and also on the World Wide Web. We're live streaming on 98.9fm.com.au. I'd like to begin by acknowledging traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. Also pay my respects to our elders, both Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. And welcome to you if you're listening to Let's Talk here in Brisbane on 98.9 FM or elsewhere in the country. Thanks for tuning in. Now, when it comes to important documents in your life, the birth certificate, that's got to be it, hasn't it? You need it for school, setting up a bank account, getting a driver's license and obtaining a passport. So what happens when you don't have one? And what might be the reasons that put you in this predicament? Over the next 3 years, a research team will be looking into this issue with a particular focus on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and their access to our birth registration system. Now, two people who are part of that research team are from Monash University's Caston Centre for Human Rights Law, Dr. Paula Gerber and Melissa Caston, who are joint deputy directors at the Human Rights Law Centre. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks, Karen.
Firstly, to you, Dr. Paula Gerber, tell us a bit about yourself and I guess how your interest in this particular issue came about.
Sure. Well, I'm a human rights law academic specialising in children's rights, and I teach a subject on children's rights, and I have always taught my students about the importance of birth registration and birth certificates, and I've used in the past as a case study the Philippines, because there's high incidences there of unregistered births of minorities, and it can lead to trafficking and child labour and all sorts of child abuse situations. It never occurred to me that lack of birth registration and birth certificates was a problem in a wealthy, developed country like Australia. And then I was listening to ABC Radio one morning, and I heard a Victorian Community Legal Centre lawyer talking about the number of clients he had who he was trying to help get a birth certificate, because either their birth had never been registered by their parents, or if it had been registered by their parents, they hadn't acquired a birth certificate at the time because it was too expensive or they didn't see the importance of it. And it was creating huge problems for these Aboriginal youths in regional Victoria who were, for example, not able to get a driver's licence. They were still driving. They were getting in trouble with the police for unlicensed driving. And it was just starting this whole chain reaction of bad consequences because they didn't have a birth certificate. And I spoke to my colleague, Melissa Caston, who's a specialist in Indigenous rights, and we started brainstorming what we could do to try and sort this problem out.
How long ago was this?
We first became aware of the problem in late 2009, and we started to do some preliminary inquiries, talk to people. We organised a symposium in Melbourne to try and get a feel of how big a problem this really was. And what we started to find out was it was a significant problem, and not just in Victoria. We started getting emails and phone calls from people all around the country saying, this is an issue for me, this is an issue in my area as well. And so we finally decided and were able to convince the government through the Australian Research Council that this was a problem, and it was worth investigating. So we got funding, which kicked in on the 1st of July this year, to, as you said in your intro, spend 3 years really looking at two distinct aspects. One is the extent of the problem, and we've got a colleague from the University of Melbourne, Associate Professor Jane Freemantle, who's an expert in this area. She's going to be looking at the statistics, at the numbers, to try and figure out exactly how big a problem it is. And then the second aspect, which Melissa and I are predominantly working on, is the qualitative aspect. That is, getting people's stories. You know, why wasn't their birth registered? What's been the consequences of it? What experiences they had trying to get a birth certificate? And most importantly, what do they think the solution to this problem is.
Well, you're 6 months into your research. What have you been able to uncover in that period of time, Melissa?
Well, that's a very good question. What we seem to have uncovered is that, as Paula mentioned, is that the more we look, the more we can see that some very obvious things, you might not have, you know, no one ever might have filed it for it earlier. And that cost does vary across Australia. You know, it can be $27 in one jurisdiction or $39 in another. But either way, for someone who's young and trying to get a, you know, make their way in the world, these costs can kind of mount up for people. And the other thing that we've looked at is the way that these costs play out when somebody wants to register their kids to get them into school. And schools tend to ask for a birth certificate to prove the age of the child or to validate their identity. But if you've got to put three kids in school, then all of a sudden these costs will start to mount up and become quite a difficulty. So that's a very basic thing that we've had feedback on. Mm. The other issue that seems to come up, which again is a fairly simple thing, is that when you need to go and get your birth certificate, you actually have to prove who you are to get it. And so you have to have certain forms of ID to prove who you are. And in some jurisdictions, the process of proving who you are means that you have to go into the police station and speak to them about it and sign an affidavit to demonstrate that you are who you say you are. That can cause problems for some people too.
Fair enough. What have you been able to determine as far as the extent of this problem? Paula, you were saying that it's significant. I mean, how significant?
Yeah, well, look, in order to access that sort of data, there's a lot of bureaucracy that universities make you go through, and one of them is to get ethics approval. So we haven't, those 3,000-plus births were Indigenous people, but we do know that a significant number of them come from regions where there are high Indigenous populations. So in Victoria, we're talking about Shepparton, Mildura, Traralgon, things like that. And the other thing that we do know is that gives us a sense that this is a big problem is that in Armidale in New South Wales, there was a group there who do financial literacy and awareness, you know, basically sort of teaching school kids about bank accounts and money and stuff like that. And they, part of that process is they want the kids to open a bank account. And when they went to do that step in Armidale, where there's a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids, they found that many of them couldn't open a bank account because they didn't have a birth certificate because their birth had never been registered. And so they said, well, what can we do about this? And they involved some students at the University of New England and some other groups to sponsor essentially a birth registration drive. And they did it last year and they did it again this year just a few weeks ago. And what they had was they had the corporations and the university essentially paying the registration fee. So as Melissa was saying, one of the obstacles to getting a birth certificate may be the cost involved. So they had that covered. And in a spate of 3 days, they registered 291 births.
How does our registration system compare to other jurisdictions? Paula, you've lived in London, and I understand it's about £6 over there.
It is. So here, for some reason, the Register of Births, Deaths and Marriages want to operate on a fee recovery basis. So they're trying to be issued free of charge.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on the National Indigenous Radio Service, broadcast from the studios of 98.9 FM in Brisbane. Karen Durandy with you for Let's Talk, and I'm with Dr. Paula Gerber, Deputy Director with the Caston Centre for Human Rights Law at Monash University. We're also speaking to her co-deputy director, Melissa Caston. We'll continue our chat in just a moment. Paula, you actually wrote about this and submitted an opinion piece onto the Drum, on the ABC's Drum, suggesting that, you know, that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples still struggle to enjoy the full citizenship rights. Why take that particular line? Because I've seen the comments that have subsequently followed that, and some of it's not very supportive, shall we say.
Yes, look, I was prompted to take that sort of slant in this piece because I've been watching Q&A the night before and being trained to become marathon runners.
Yep.
And he found a number of young people in the Northern Territory and started working with them and training them to run marathons. And he thought the ideal sort of first event for them to compete in would be the inaugural East Timor Marathon in Dili. So they all were training to peak for that event. So I was reading this article with interest, and then the last paragraph was, but we nearly didn't make it because do you know how difficult it is to get to a marathon overseas if you don't have a birth certificate? And he said if it hadn't been for the help of the federal police who actually intervened to help them get passports for these young people to compete overseas. So that's the idea that I took, is that you're not really enjoying your full citizenship rights if you are legally invisible, if you cannot prove who you are to authorities and the others. But, you know, you're right, it did get a lot of comments, 229, and some of which were, you know, quite insightful and interesting to read, and some which just showed the extent to which we still need to educate people and raise awareness about inequality in this country and about the importance of birth certificates and how it might be easier for some people to get it than others. And one of the areas that this is being highlighted in at the moment is that the Victorian Law Reform Commission has just closed their consultation into this issue, but they're actually looking at it broader than our research, the Monash University research, because they've decided they're not just going to look at Indigenous Australians, but also at the CALD community, the culturally and linguistically diverse community, so refugees and new immigrants and things like that, to see the extent to which this is a problem in other perhaps, you know, what could be termed disadvantaged communities. And I think it's demonstrating that there is a need to raise awareness and educate people about birth certificates and the importance of them and how to access them.
Mm. Melissa, what age group are we looking at here? Are we looking at that this is an issue for people who were born pre-60s or sort of, you know, born between 60s and now?
Well, that's interesting because actually it seems to affect all sorts of age groups, and definitely, you know, you might expect that people...
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't know what I would have done without my birth certificate and not being able to get my driver's licence. Melissa, tell us, you know, why is this a human rights issue?
I think it's a human rights issue because it actually goes to the very basis of a person's existence and credibility in the legal world.
I would imagine, Paula, bringing you back into the discussion and just looking at, I have to admit, I only looked very quickly at some of the comments that had come through after your opinion piece on the drum. But, you know, there was a lot of talk there about individual responsibility, parental responsibility, and then the discussion about, well, you know, they must be able to get around it because clearly they're getting Centrelink payments and that sort of thing. I mean, there are a lot of assumptions going on there and stereotyping going on.
Yes, it tells me that we need to do more about civics and citizenship education in schools because one of the issues with living in a federation, I mean, that's one way that, you know, maybe we'll look at to overcome this problem.
And I don't know about you two. The other area, I suppose, is if you're a new mum and you've got taking Bub home, the amount of paperwork that you get given at the hospital after the birth, who has time to fill it all out?
Oh, it's incredibly overwhelming and intimidating. And, you know, I've got three young children, and I was sent home with all that documentation. And, you know, I consider myself to be a reasonably intelligent person, and I struggled to get through it all and make heads and tail of what was going on. So I think one of the things that could happen is simplification of the whole birth registration process. And the Caston Centre for Human Rights Law just actually wrote a submission to the Victorian Law Reform Commission's inquiry into this area and said that one of the things we need to look at is how complicated we're making the birth registration documentation. So, for example, one of the questions asked on the Victorian application to register a birth is, what is the circumference of your baby's head? Well, I'm sorry, but who knows? And who cares? I mean, it's going to change in a matter of months anyway, one would have thought.
Why do they need to know that?
Well, that's right. So I think there is this question about, are we using this application form as a way to get more data, we, the government, the authorities, whoever, to get more data than is actually, strictly speaking, necessary for birth registration? And is that going to put people off? They're going, well, if I don't know that, I can't register my baby's birth, so don't bother. And then, of course, as you said, the other issue is you've got a you know, the screaming baby that maybe's not particularly sleeping well or feeding well, and your priority is going to be looking after your child, not trying to get on top of this paperwork.
Mm. Whose responsibility, though, does it come down to in regards to the non-registration? I mean, do hospitals have a duty here to ensure that babies, infants, children are registered? Melissa?
Well, hospitals do keep records of births, and they used to have the habit of the midwife filling in the paperwork for you back in the old days, but that was considered probably a bit, you know, bossy and interfering in some ways.
Yeah.
But the hospitals keep the record of the births, but they don't keep the details of, you know, who was actually born to whom for people at that very vulnerable time, you know, with a new baby.
Mm.
And, of course, if you wait too long and go past the 60 days to get your forms in, then they start charging you a late fee as well. So it's kind of, you know, making it even more of an impediment. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why people may be not getting to doing that job quickly, but what we'd like to see is it is made as simple and as straightforward as possible to help with that. And We hoping and encouraged by the cooperation of the various different government departments to help us in working through some of these things and creating a much more streamlined system that's beneficial for everyone, because, of course, the more births that are registered, the better all our health data is and our planning data and our schools and all of that, and then the better it is for the individual and for the family concerned as well. So it's working at different levels.
Mm. Can I ask why you're not looking at New South Wales, which has obviously got the highest population of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in any jurisdiction in this country, although I think Queensland does come close? Have they just got their system right there?
We don't know whether they've got their system right. The evidence would suggest that perhaps they don't, because of that example I gave you.
About Armidale, yep.
Yeah. The reason we came up with the jurisdictions that we did to do this research is essentially because of the relationships that we have with different organisations and bodies in those jurisdictions. So the funding that we've got from the Australian Research Council, from the government, is under what's called a linkage grant, which means that we have links with partners who are going to work on this project with us. And so, for example, in Perth, we have the Western Australian Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission as one of our partners, and Hills Community Group, which is a not-for-profit organisation that has helping young people in crisis, and they contacted us, said, we've heard about you investigating this problem and doing research, and we're interested too. Can we come on board?
They've encountered it themselves, have they?
They have, yes, with their young people constantly, they said. In Queensland, the Department of Communities in the Queensland government contacted us and said, we know this is a problem and we are keen to find a solution and we'd like to work with you. So they're our partner there. In in the Northern Territory, Tanganyiri Aboriginal Council came on board and said, this is a huge problem for us in the Northern Territory because so many of our children aren't even born in hospitals. And, of course, hospitals are where you get handed the documentation about birth registration. So if you're not born in a hospital, it becomes even more of a problem to register the birth because you're not even given the paperwork in the first place. And in Victoria, we have the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service have come on board. Clayton Utes Lawyers are interested in working with us on this project, and Plan International, an international aid organisation that has a huge... So that's how we came to pick those jurisdictions, and also just because... although 3 years sounds like a long time, in fact, it's already flying by really quickly. And as much as we'd like to do this research across every jurisdiction in Australia, that just wasn't possible.
Yes. You're nearly 6 months into it. You're still sorting out the ethics, you were saying before. But for people who do have a story to tell and want to share their experience with you, what is the best way to go about that?
Well, the best way is actually just to contact us directly through Monash University at the moment. We're hoping to set up a website and be able to take people's, you know, stories and feedback through that, but we're not quite there yet. And so emailing either myself or Paula at Monash is probably just the most direct way to communicate with us at this point. But, yeah, we're going to be travelling with our in-house anthropologist, Rod Hagen, who's come onto our team as well, and we're going to be travelling around to different jurisdictions and talking to people and trying to have some conversations about these issues. And when we do that, we'd love people to come forward and talk to us about what their thoughts are on this issue.
I don't imagine you'd encounter too many people not concerned about coming forward because without that birth certificate, gee, life can be pretty difficult, although we have heard some cases where people have been able to get around it.
Yeah, well, we found that when we start talking to people, everyone's very keen to share their stories and very generous with their time, and it really has to do with the fact that it seems to be such an issue that's just an undercurrent playing out in a lot of different places and a lot of different communities, and yet it hasn't until now really bubbled to the surface of people's consciousness of that's what the problem is. And I guess people had thought, oh, it's just me, I forgot to do it, or mum forgot to do it, or somebody didn't, and it's just me that's in this funny situation. But in fact, it seems to be a bit more chronic than that, and we'd like to unpack some of those issues and get to the bottom of it.
Do you expect to encounter stories where people just, particularly from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, where they just say, look, you know, I don't want to be part of the system because... you know, it's foreign to me. It's not a priority.
Look, that may well be the case, and we want to document those stories as well. I mean, we really want to understand what people's thought process is, and is it that, you know, this is not a system that I want to be a part of, and I'm opting out of it, and that's, you know, that's something that we should record and know about as well. I think one of the things that we've found so far in starting our research process is that, you know, many pieces of academic research can be highly theoretical and don't necessarily lead to change or reform. And one of the things that we're very committed to in undertaking this research is at the end of the 3 years, we want to see that this problem has been resolved, that everyone who wants to register the birth of their children and obtain a birth certificate can. You know, there is a human right to universal birth registration. Every person hoping that really that this will result in law reform or policy reform or change in practices and increase in awareness, and that sees it, you know, in a few years' time, this is no longer something that we need to talk about as a problem in Australia.
Do you anticipate other cultural practices might have an impact in terms of birth registration? I'm thinking particularly in the Torres Strait of traditional islander adoptions. Melissa, you might want to comment on that, seeing as your father had a lot to do with Torres Strait Islanders.
Yeah, look, there's... there's lots of different practices that will happen all around Australia, and you know, operating in the mainstream government system as well. And in the Torres Strait, there are systems for dealing with those issues, and we just have to know how that interacts with what we're with this issue that we're looking at now. But, you know, just as it happens in the Torres Strait, there'll be something different happening in other places as well. So, yeah, we've probably got possibly got an infinite task again.
and one of the things, too, that we'll be looking at is, you know, most of the states say that the birth must be registered within 60 days. Well, some cultural practices may be that the child is not named, doesn't receive a name within 60 days. That the, you know, there's more consultation with families and communities that has to take place before a child can be named. And you can't register a child without a name. So is the 60-day limit too strict? Now, we know from talking to registrars of births, deaths and marriages that they are happy to always register a birth, even if it's after the 60 days. They'd rather still have that birth registered. But the fact that you may be... the form says you will be penalised. There are fees that have to be paid if you register late. So is that going to operate as a sort of a barrier to registration as well? If people think, oh, look, if I can't do it within 60 days, I'm going to risk getting fined or something, therefore I just won't do it.
If you listed your partners in this particular research, and I'm wondering about those organisations that also encounter this issue. Are you able to take on partners as the research progresses, or maybe obviously collect evidence from them in terms of what's going on?
Look, we are happy to talk and to collaborate with as many people who would like to be involved as possible. We probably can't formally have them called partners because the Australian Research Council is rather bureaucratic about that and says the partners are those who were on the grant application when you submitted it, which was, you know, well over 12 months ago. But look, we're interested to really get the input and views of as many people as possible and to work with them. They just won't formally be labelled as linkage partners as such.
You're probably on the same sort of, you know, thinking on this, but ultimately, what do you hope to see as a result of this research? To you first, Paula, and then Melissa, if you wanted to add anything to that.
I would like to see that every child born in Australia has their birth registered and has a birth certificate that come up with solutions that they've had input into, they're happy with, and that they are comfortable and confident is going to solve this problem.
Just before we go to you, Melissa, we have had someone call into the program. Who's calling? Hello? Oh, no, they've gone. Not to worry.
That's a shame.
I would have liked to have heard what they were going to say. But anyway, go ahead, Melissa.
Sorry, I was just going to start. Right now, I'd like to encourage everyone to have a think about, do I actually have a birth certificate? Have I got one, or have my kids got one? Did we do that? And if they haven't, you know, hop on the internet or check out the materials and think, now is the time for me to do this, because if I'm going to have to do this, I don't want to wait until the last minute. I don't want to wait till they're actually having to enrol in school. I don't want to wait till they're getting their licence. I want it done now, and I'm going to get that certificate now. And in fact, most of the registrars of births, deaths and marriages where you get this documentation from will actually waive the fees if they're asked and a good argument's put to them. So we would encourage people to go out now and see, you know, can I get this certificate now, or do I wait till the last minute until it's all becoming a big problem and causes us, you know, issues in our life instead of just doing it as a normal administrative kind of task.
I think that person has called back. Hello? No, we're just having fun with the phones at the moment. Well, look, I appreciate both your contribution today here on Let's Talk, and I guess we will follow the research with interest when that website gets up. Please let us know, and we'll let our listeners know. And what I might do is grab your email addresses, and if people want to get in touch with you both, we'll pass it out through the when they ring us here at the station.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about this.
Thank you also to Melissa Caston. That was just Dr. Paula Gerber there, Deputy Director at the Caston Centre for Human Rights Law at Monash University. Melissa Caston is also Deputy Director there and with Monash University. Thank you both for your time today. And a special shout out to you if you're listening at 3KND in Melbourne. Rounding up Let's Talk for today and this week. If you've missed any of our broadcasts, a podcast is available on our website at 989fm.com.au. That's 989fm.com.au. I'm Karen Durante. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you next week.